So today I'm talking to Dennis Binns, who has lived in Auchencairn for over 30 years, but prior to that he was teaching travelling children in the Manchester area. So we're going to talk about that. So Dennis, how did you get involved?
I was looking for a new job. I was working in special education, educationally subnormal children, and although I quite enjoyed the job, the headmaster and I didn't really see eye to eye on many things. So when I applied for new jobs, I was not getting any replies. So I spoke to the inspector, a Chinese woman, who was catering for the minority groups in Manchester. How's the sound level?
The sound level's good.
Good. Anyway, because of the new legislation about providing education for the travelling children, and extra money was available for it, he suggested that I apply for this post. And so I did. And I got accepted for the job. I might well have been the only candidate, and not everybody's cup of tea, but I didn't know what the job entailed, and quite honestly, neither did the education authority. They just found that they had to provide education for any of the travellers in Manchester. And we did have an official gypsy site with some families on it. So once I'd accepted the job, they put a mobile hut, a classroom hut, up in the playground on the nearest primary school to the gypsy site. So the travellers wouldn't have to travel too far. You'll probably find my voice goes later. So I started at the beginning of the autumn term, and on my first day there were seven pupils that came up the hill from the site. Three girls and three brothers. And the brothers were Nathan, John and Tony, and the girls were Laurel, Elaine, and those two were sisters, and the other girl was Yvonne Vary. Luckily, they had all been to school somewhere or other in the past, and so they sort of settled down and they got to know each other, and there was no one in charge of the school apart from myself, and so I started off by doing maths in the morning, which when people were supposed to be at their brightest, and then reading in the afternoon, and then perhaps art or craft in the afternoon, and it was quite a nicely equipped classroom. It had windows all around, well, on two sides, sorry, and a sloping roof, ceiling. And I had a woodwork table in there and enough chairs and desk for everybody. So with the maths, I had some very basic maths book, which I gave them to each of the children. And they started working their way through it. And they could all write their names, which didn't apply later, but on that first term they did. Then in the afternoon, I tried to work out a test of their reading level to find out how good or poor their reading was. And so I had some Ladybird books and two or three other different courses. And we started them off on those. And so we kept a record of what they could read and what math they were able to do. And we redid math and English every day for the first week or two. I was beginning to order more equipment, particularly in the craft line. I had a stone polishing machine and a sheet of copper for cutting up into bracelets and thongs for making pendants and necklaces. And so we did all sorts of various work.
What were the reading levels, Dennis?
Pardon?
What was the reading like? Could they read much at all?
The reading?
Mm.
The reading was aged below their age, as I remember it, but only about 2 years below. Mm. So 8 years. Well, the three goals were, 11, 12, and about 10, I think. And this is, of course, I'm talking now about 46 years ago.
1960s.
Yeah, 66. And so where am I going from here? One of the first things I did that first week was to make go-karts. I would put the children in the car because there were few enough of them to make room for them. And we would go around Salford, around the areas where they're knocking all the old buildings down, and pick up any pram wheels we could find. And we put lots of pram wheels in the car and went back to the school. And then they started building the go-kart with a place for their feet for steering and two wheels at the front, and they could steer it on the bar across. And then they had a seat, and making brakes was a problem to start with, but eventually we managed to solve that. And then they took them home and played with them on the Dipsy site. So what I wanted to do was to try and make most lessons seem relevant to their own lives and what they wanted out of it. So we got on quite well. And I think that second or third day was the first time I learnt my first Dipsy word. Tony said Johnny had been over and pinched the pencil off his desk. And, sir, he's chawed me pencil. And I knew that chawed was an old Sanskrit word in India. And he had come with their ancestors all the way across from India and Persia, right across to Europe and into Britain. Mm. And here was one of my pupils speaking ancient Sanskrit. But I was, of course, later to learn a lot more. And then I had a group of Irish travellers coming in. They weren't on the site, but they'd heard about the school. And there were about six or seven of them, probably all related, brothers and sisters. the oldest girl was about 13, and I got them all set down. They all came barefooted, and none of them had shoes. And luckily, I had a big bag full of school pumps, which some other schools had given me. And this is when I started. I could look at a pair of children's feet and tell you what size they were. And I'm fishing them all out with plimsolls or pumps. And so they all behaved themselves. They're all sat in the classroom, and I gave them colouring books to start with. Some of the children would hold up pencil and they could work out, it would say, colour this blue. Probably because of the word letter, first letter B, which I taught them. They would hold up the blue pencil. "Sir, is this blue?" Because they wouldn't know their colours. They had no idea what colours were called. So I would say yes or no, as appropriate. And they would get on with it. And then the school, primary school bell went, and the primary school children came out to play. And so the oldest girl, I've forgotten her name now, "What's that bell for?" I said, "It's playtime. Do you want to go out and play?" "Oh, yeah." And she stood up and said, "Come on, let's go and call the Goulins." I thought, call, that means hit. Goulins means children. Right, go back and sit down, all of you. And you're not going out to hit the children. The oldest girl there was a bit gobsmacked when he realised that I understood her language up to a point. So I made them sit there until the playtime was over, and then I let them out.
So
that's one of my little stories.
The time that they all went missing, Dennis. What about the time that you let them out for playtime and they disappeared?
Oh, I'll come back to that one.
All right.
Well, yes, later in around about November, we had a really misty day, foggy, a bit of a November fog. The whole class went out to play as usual. When the bell went for them to come back, nobody turned up. In fact, they didn't turn up for half an hour, and I stood there waiting. So eventually, after about an hour, they started turning up at the door. So I thought, I better behave like a real teacher here. So I made them all line up and told them off what they were doing. "You know you were doing wrong, and I don't want to ever see this happen again." I didn't lose my temper or anything, but I just talked to them. And so then they all said they understood they had to come in when the bell went. So next day, when I arrived at school, not one of them turned up. And I suddenly realised I wasn't the only boss there. How I had to sort of play it by ear, really, just to see what I can get away with before they did. Now, when the classroom was situated, by looking out the window, we could see the CIS building, which is the tallest building in Manchester. CIS stands for Cooperative Insurance Services. And on the top floor, it's used as an observation room, and the public are allowed up there. So I thought it'd be a nice idea to take all the class. This is in the afternoon after they've done their work. So we all walked quite orderly down to the CIS building, went in and got into a lift, and got carried right up to the top floor. We all got out and went into the observation room, and they were looking at it. And the oldest boy, Nathan, was looking at the windows, and they're all sort of metal frame windows up there. And he said, if you knock this building down, this scrap iron would be worth a fortune. And I said, yes.
I earn the prize.
Have you heard that one before?
I have, yes. Yeah. But the recorder hasn't.
Anyway, that was that trip. And and then it was getting near Christmas and the fairground season was over, and all the fairground families no longer operated their machines in their stalls, and they all went to their winter quarters. Unfortunately, Manchester winter quarters were just above the gypsy site down below. And so I suddenly found I started having fairground children coming in. Now, fairground children call us flatties. That's because we're all on the ground, whereas they're usually raised up a bit on their machines. And so now I had three different groups. I had the Irish travellers, the fairground children, and the Romany, what I call the Romany gypsies. And I often used to think that the fairground were the ones that looked down on the other two groups, and even though quite a lot of their ancestors were Romany gypsy, the Romany gypsies sort of didn't like the Irish travellers. And that was it, basically. But I did manage to keep them all at peace with each other in the classroom, although it wasn't always easy. And where am I going? Anyway, in the fairground children, first of all, there were two girls, Alison and Gaynor. Their mother was one of the poorer fairground people with a stall of rolling pennies down slot machines and things like that. But they both had school uniforms, but they'd had it at some previous school. And it seemed to make my school really posh, having two schoolgirls in school uniforms. They could both read, but two other girls came in whose father was much richer, and they had a much bigger living wagon, as they call them. They don't call them trailers. And Samantha and Gaynor, they had Dodgem cars, which is, it takes money to run and money to buy, but they were more affluent than the other two girls' parents. But they still all accepted each other as fairground people. All fairground people throughout Britain all know each other, and they always marry within the group. And they wouldn't dream of marrying outside the group. And then one or two of them do use some of the Gypsy Romany words. Where am I going? Anyway, I worked very hard on Gainer, who couldn't read. And she could read a little, but it was very basic. Anyway, I pushed that up with various reading schemes. And I worked on her hard. And next time I went and I saw her, I was visiting Knutsford, and the fairground was there. And the fairground was on. This is next year. And there in the middle of the dodging cars, was Gainer was sat there reading a book, which I found really exciting. Her father was so pleased, he bought me a bottle of whiskey for Christmas, which I've really treasured. Right, I'm going to have to stop there.
Okay, stop.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have to breath.
Pause it.